The public should be concerned with how this process is being handled by the city of Troy, how they proceed and what they decide. Backdoor dealings and lack of public input will set precedents for future developers coming into the city. You might not be for our cause to save 1011 today, but what happens if a developer comes in with a project that you're against, and this precedence has already been set? You don't have to support our purpose, but you should support the process. My name is Sarah Bachinger. I am one of the co-founders and community outreach coordinator for Friends of the Mohicantuck.
And I'm Leo. I'm also a co-founder of the Friends of the Mohicantuck and a co-organizer, and I focus on policy and legislative affairs.
Welcome, Sarah and Leo, to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. You're working on an action for later this week. Could you tell us what is going on?
Yes, absolutely. So we've been advocating to protect a sacred indigenous site in North Troy and Lansingburg for the last year. It's also the last forest along the Hudson River in the city of Troy. And so it's a really, really important site, not only for the indigenous peoples, but for the entire city and the region, for the history and for its relevance for green space, for protection against flooding and things like that. And this land is right now threatened by a development. Kevin Vandenberg is proposing to build 3 4-story apartment buildings there, build 240 apartment units, tear down the forest. He proposes to blast underground garages into the archaeosensitive sites and sacred sites on this land. And so we've been organizing together with the community and many groups locally and in the region to prevent this development and see this land preserved for the future generations. And on Thursday, we are coming out with the community to a city council meeting to make sure that the community voices are heard by the city, and we invite everybody to come and join us to that.
What can we learn from indigenous land relationships?
A lot, actually. 80% of the global biodiversity is on indigenously stewarded land. And we really see, when we look now at climate change, that the most climate resilient communities are often on indigenously stewarded land. So it's really this impactful moment in time right now where globally the international community realizes that we have to turn to the indigenous communities and indigenous leaders to find the solutions together with them and with their leadership. And a big inspiration for that is probably right now in Chile, where the constitution is being rewritten under the president, presided over by an indigenous woman as the leader, which is a huge moment that comes out of that recognition.
And you mentioned stewarded land because indigenous communities don't feel ownership over land. Instead, they're just taking care of it.
Exactly.
So how is this important for non-indigenous people to preserve this land?
The importance for non-indigenous peoples is the same in many ways, because we all depend on the same soils, on the same waters, on the same trees, on the same air to live, right? And so it's really about also this decision. Do we support the land and the plants that we depend on, or are we destroying them, right? And the land that we are seeking to protect is such a perfect example, because it's on the very northern part of the city of Troy. The entire city of Troy lies downstream from this land. And so this forest is a natural shield against many, many dangers and gives us so many benefits to the communities, right? It provides us with fresh air, but it's also a flood buffer, and it protects the Hudson River from stormwater runoff and from all the fuels from the streets and all the pollutants to go into the river and then poison us down the river. So there is no telling what will happen to downstream communities from that land, which is the entire city, if it's developed. And additionally, the land is located in a DEC-designated environmental justice area. The neighborhood is historically redlined. We were just the other day out on the land and ran into a group of black youth who told us, once we told them what's happening to this land, they're taking everything from us. And it just goes to tell how important green spaces, especially in historically redlined communities, environmental justice communities, are, because it's the exception. We can look into the past and look where green spaces are, and they're never in poor communities. They're never in non-white communities. And so that this forest still exists is exceptional, right? And it's really important to this community for all those reasons too, as a green space. Especially, we all went through this experience of the pandemic together, right? And this green space gives relief and gives health and peace.
What is the argument for development?
There are two arguments that are usually brought up there. The one is tax benefits for the city, and the other is living space. And both can be very, very easily debunked. We worked with some experts on this on a general look. We didn't provide a detailed analysis yet, but we calculated what are the expected tax revenue from this development and compared it to increases for public service costs, increases for the school district, increases for public safety. We know that the police station and the fire station in this neighborhood are already at capacity. So when we put all those numbers together and what is called public service cost, then we really see that the development would generate in tax revenue for the city is outweighed by far by the additional costs that it would generate for the city. The second argument is living space. And what the developer proposes is to build high-end apartment units. And the Federal Department for Housing and Urban Development came out with an analysis for housing demand for the Capital District and said that for this kind of housing, we are at demand. What that means is that housing demand, people looking to rent these kinds of places, are in limited supply. And when we look around all the vacant land and all the abandoned buildings, think of the abandoned Price Chopper, think of the former Leonard Hospital, there will not be enough demand to develop these sites if we instead tear down a natural forest. So it makes no sense from the city's planning perspective to pursue this, because it limits their capacity to actually develop the sites that need development, and it will increase costs because it's an undeveloped site that they want to develop now.
So let's talk a little bit more about the action that you're working on. There's also some art involved, and I'd love to hear about that. Maybe some of our listeners would be interested in joining.
Yes, so we will be meeting at 4:30 on Thursday, July 8th at the Carriage House behind Collard City Growers. We're getting together with the community, ordering some tacos and making some signs to bring with us down to City Hall. We'll be leaving the Carriage House at about 6 p.m. to head down to City Hall. Weather permitting, we'll be walking, but we encourage people, if they're not so adventurous, to drive down to meet us there. The meeting starts at 7, and we will be heading into the meeting at that time. We are not on the agenda for the meeting, so we do want to be considerate of those members of the public who are there to support or
speak on the matters that they came to speak on that are on the agenda, right?
Mm-hmm.
Come at 4:30 if you want to meet us in the community and get some tacos in your hands, and then walk down with us and switch out the tacos for a sign and maybe speak. It's really important because the city is about to make a really important decision about this development. And this decision is about if the public gets a say in this process or if it doesn't. The city is issuing what is called a positive or negative declaration. And a positive declaration means, yes, we have to study all the impacts that this development might have and do it in a public scoping process, which means that the public gets a say in what is being studied and how it is being studied. If they issue a negative declaration, then none of that happens. No studies, no public input, and the development just moves ahead. And the city council has to make this decision, or should make this decision, by the end of July. And that's why we are coming this Thursday, because we want to make sure that the public and the public's voice and the community's voice is heard, and the city of Troy knows that the public and the community wants to be heard before they make the decision, and to make sure that they make the decision in time and not do first back behind the door, behind closed doors, information gathering just with the developer outside of the public eye. And so that's why we have to show up now to insist that our voice is heard. And there are tacos.